Hello.
All right, well, are we all kind of ready to go here then?
Hello, and welcome to Lucky, episode 14 of the Functional Nerds. Lucky because we're praying to the Skype gods that they favor us this week and don't mess with us. We're the guys who like to sit around and talk about Apple computers, science fiction and fantasy stuff, music, video games, but not so much, comic books, you know, any of that kind of stuff. And then we record that talk and share it with you, our faithful listeners. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, a podcaster, and functional nerd. And I've been doing this now for 14 episodes with my partner in crime, Mr. John Anilio.
Hey, I'm John. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy and other nerdy things. I have all my stuff over at sci-fi song. blogspot.com. Each week on the Functional Nerds, or this is the way it's sort of ended up being, and we're really happy this format seems to be working pretty nicely for us, but we have a third nerd, and this week's third nerd is John Ottinger. John, say hello.
Hi.
Hey, John is the proprietor of the popular SFF blog Grasping for the Wind. His reviews, interviews, and articles have appeared in Publishers Weekly, The Fix, Sacramento Book Review, Stephen Hunt's SF Crow's Net, and Tor.com.
I don't know. I was waiting for you to hit that word. Yes.
How do you pronounce that one, Patrick? Is that thaumatrope?
That's how I would pronounce it, yeah.
Okay, and Tor.com.
It's thaumatrope, yeah. Thaumatrope. Look it up. It's in the dictionary, man. You can get it.
Okay. I wasn't really prepared for that one. Sorry. But, John, thank you for joining us. We were really glad to have you.
For the record, folks, Anilio hates to read things. So that was hilarious. I'm sorry.
I usually don't read any of that stuff, but I wanted to give you a proper intro. And I was like, oh, well, I could get through this. Yeah, I generally, Patrick writes some stuff down and I never read it. That's the way it really works. But John, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you.
John is one of the, I would say the premier bloggers on science fiction and fantasy books, and I've known about his blog for quite some time, and when we had Aidan Moer of A Dribble of Ink on, I was talking about how some bloggers like John just read at an incredible pace and write these excellent reviews and other things too. And it just blows me away because I'm such a slow reader. So, John, before we get into anything, I'd like to hear a little bit about your story. What kind of led you into doing what you ultimately have done with Grasping for the Wind and your reviews at all of these other sites? What led you from someone that maybe just got interested in reading to someone that reads so much and writes such excellent reviews? What was that journey like for you?
Well, in a lot of ways, I mean, I've always been a reader, been reading since a very young age. I can't remember a time I didn't have a book in my hand. A bit of a loner growing up, which helped fuel that sort of need to read. So, always been a reader, which I think is what contributes to kind of the speed effect, just constant swallowing of new books. And but as far as blogging goes, actually that started through a friend of mine who was running in the early days of blogging sort of, I don't even know what the word for it is, but just held a lot of different blogs. Like he would host your blog, basically a blog hosting, and it was all free. And I thought about it, but I was like, nah, I don't really have anything to say. And he goes, you're so opinionated, you have to you're so opinionated, you just got to do it. So he set me up with one, and at the time I didn't really know what to talk about. Made a few fits and starts in 2004. And finally, just settled on, you know what, why don't I just write about what I'm reading and see where it goes? And from that point on, it really took off. And people like Tia Nevitt, she was Fantasy Debuts then, now it's Debuts and Reviews, I think. Mm-hmm. And found me, mentioned me, and started, people started talking about it. And after that, it was, you know, it's just book reviewing history, I guess.
I wonder if that's how I found out about you, because I'd been aware of Tia's blog fairly early on as well. So I wonder if that's how I ended up discovering your blog as well. Now, a couple things. First, were you always primarily a science fiction and fantasy reader? I mean, I'm sure you read other things as well, but has that always been sort of a primary focus of yours?
Always, yeah. Well, I started out, I probably didn't really fall into science fiction and fantasy until I picked up the works of David Eddings when probably, okay, sure, I'd say that was fourth grade or so. And before that, it had been mostly detective novels and the typical stuff kids read at that age. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just, after reading that, I was like, I love this stuff. I just have to swallow it. And of course, my father had read to me as a child. He'd read me Tolkien. He'd read me Lewis, C.S. Lewis, before bed every night. And so I already had sort of that love of mythos and love of the unreal, you know, mm-hmm. The imaginary. And so in that way, he kind of fostered that in me. And then after that, you know, I started picking it up for myself.
Yeah, I think you're a great story in terms of a blogger. I find blogging kind of an interesting thing because last week we had Merle Lafferty on the show, and great guest, and great,
fantastic.
And she's, you know, as talked about last week, kind of a pioneer in podcasting. And you know, I had mentioned last time about how one of the reasons why I even got an iPod to begin with was because I'd heard about podcasting. And this is like the early, early days of podcasting before anybody really knew what it was. And I remember trying to explain podcasting to people and they didn't get it. I think the majority of the public still doesn't know what podcasting is, but more people do now than they did, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. But I think at the same time that I was discovering podcasts, I was also discovering blogs. Now, blogs had been around for longer, but I know, you know, when I got my, I use a Macintosh, and when I got my eMac, I remember like installing Firefox and then subscribing to blogs. And
I prefer the Safari reader.
Okay.
But I hate Safari as a browser.
Mm.
Oh yeah, I can't stand it as a browser.
But
I'm a PC user myself. But
I really like the reader. I mean, I miss the reader. I don't use it now. I've switched completely to Google Reader.
Me too.
But,
yeah.
But not because I love Google Reader more. It's just because I've had so many problems with Safari.
Yeah.
But that's a side issue.
Yeah, but no, it's on topic though, because I think maybe the reason why blogs, you know, became what they are today is because of Google Reader or Safari or something where you could subscribe to them and just sort of look down at your headlines and click on what you like, what you find interesting. And
which I do every day at lunch.
Yeah. And this was way before I decided to start doing sci-fi songs. Like I was subscribed to some music blogs and, you know, I always read science fiction and fantasy. And I think just from maybe looking up, you know, throwing into Google some books or just sci-fi blogs or something, I found some of the current blogs that I read. And then I started to notice this community of science fiction and fantasy review blogs. Would you call Grasping for the Wind a review blog, John? Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I generally stick with review blog. I mean, the majority of my content is reviews with occasional interviews and guest posts and things interspersed in there, but most of the self-generated content is reviews. And of course, mm-hmm. now I have my partner in crime, Pipe Dreamer Gray, who puts together those daily listings of things going around on the internet.
How do I get on that list?
Talk to him. But actually, you send me an email. I'll send it to him, and he'll put you on there.
You know, we have this thing that comes out every Friday that fits right into the Geek Media Roundup. It's called the Functional Nerds Podcast.
I haven't heard of that one yet.
What is that exactly?
I noticed this community sort of developing. I mean, I had gone to some of these science fiction review blogs because I was just looking for reviews of the books to see what are the good science fiction books that are out there. And And I forget what some of the early ones that I discovered. Yours might have been there, or it might have been a little bit later than that that I discovered yours.
So many have gone away.
Yeah, a lot have gone. And that's the nature of blogging.
Sure.
In general. Although I think now with Twitter, I think a lot of people who initially maybe got into blogging just go to Twitter because they just want to kind of share their thoughts and don't necessarily want to have a brand like I think most bloggers that we know do. But
and that works great when Twitter is up and running.
Right, right.
Which is so rare.
For more than an hour.
It's been good lately, and then the last couple days or last week or so, it's pretty bad again. But anyway, so I noticed this sort of community developing, and I think, you know, Patrick and I talked about this once. About before we started our respective sort of projects and blogs and things like that, we thought about it for separately. This is way before we knew each other. about I want to do something. I want to do a blog. I want to do a podcast. I want to do something. What do I want to do? And I think one of the things that led me to doing sci-fi songs is obviously I'm a musician and a songwriter, and I write songs, and I had looked into some of the music blogs and things like that, and I decided against that because I was like, a lot of people are doing that, and I don't know if that's so interesting. And I was just reading all these science fiction review blogs because that was my interest as a reader. And I'd written a couple songs about science fiction prior to that, and then I realized, like, there's this really nice community here. What if I, you know, sort of focus my songwriting on this sort of content? There's already these people here that like this stuff. Maybe this is an audience that I, and eventually that sort of happened for me. But, you know, I love the community. And I think one of the things that you did, you know, that really helped to fan the flames of this community to make it even bigger was your link up meme, from I guess about a year and a half ago now. Can you tell us a little something about the link up meme?
Well, yeah, that was actually something I stole from somebody else.
Best ideas often are.
Yeah, that's very true. When I first started blogging, you know, I was looking for ways, how do I promote my blog? How do I get people to look at it and see it and be interested in it, especially since I was hidden, tucked away in this little hosting that nobody had ever heard of place.
Right, yep.
So, which, you know, the original site was otter.cubblogs.com. I mean, that was way tucked away. Now, of course, I've moved to graspingforthewind.com, which is much easier to find. And I'm glad I got it, too, because originally that site was a kite flying club site. So just turned out that when I was looking for it, it was open again. So picked it up real quick. Anyway, as far as getting into that, the link-up meme, there was something called the Z-List, which a bunch of advertisers, as always, are early adoptees of new technology. And this one particular advertiser put together this something called the Z-List. And he asked everybody to do essentially what I did with the link-up meme, which was, you know, take this list that I self-generated, add yourself to it, and then post it to your blog, and it will bring everybody's Technorati rankings up. This is back when they had the old system for Technorati.
Can I just?
And that was the only rank.
I just want to interject that I friggin' hate Technorati. That site is so buggy for me every time I've ever tried to use it.
Oh yeah, I can never get that thing to work. And graspingforthewind.com, the new site that I transferred to, I transferred to that in October. I still have a 1 rating. I used to be like in the top 30 blogs of Technorati.
Yeah, I don't get what they're doing over there. It's a trip.
Yeah, so I don't get it.
Anyway, back to the link of me.
Yeah. So anyway, I kind of took that idea and applied it to the SF community. And I said, okay, guys, here's what I have in my blog role. If you'd like to be added, add yourself and then post this to your blog, and it will help boost everybody's rankings. And again, we still had the old Technorati system at that time, so everybody's rankings were boosted, and of course the talk was boosted, and everybody, people were hearing that, hey, we're out here and we're talking to SFNF, come on, join us.
Yeah, I thought it was just an amazing thing, which probably something you didn't really think too much about. Often the things that are the most successful or get you the most notice are things that you probably just gave – I'm putting words in your mouth, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. You probably just thought like, oh, that's a good idea. Let's do that. You know, you probably didn't think it would become what it did.
No, exactly. I mean, I totally did not expect that to go anywhere. I just thought, hey, maybe 5 or 6 people that I know will pick it up and we'll toss it out there and – then all of a sudden I've got this list of like 200 something blogs, including ones from overseas, outside the US, I should say.
Yep. And what's funny is when you put that out and we're telling, you know, asking people, I wanted to, but I don't do reviews. Reviews are hard. And I mean, it's one of the things that I tried to do very early on. I thought, oh, I'm going to jump in and do these review thing because I read books all the time. And then when you actually sit down and you try to review a book, it's friggin' hard.
Yeah.
And so
it's difficult. Yeah.
I never did it. But looking on it here, you know, you've got, what'd you say, like 200 blogs. And you have links to translate this list into Romanian, French, Chinese, Danish, Portuguese, and German.
Well, yeah. Some of those are Portuguese, Danish blogs.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
That's still cool. I mean, you have it broken out by language.
Yeah, tried to. They sent it to me and they said, hey, can we do it? I know that we're a foreign language. I said, hey, it's no skin off my nose.
Yeah.
To add you guys. I mean, and so, of course, a lot of those, just like any blogs, I mean, it's transient. So I try to keep it updated, but you know how that goes.
Yeah, of course. And I think, you know, I remember coming across that and I remember my initial thought was like, oh, that's cool. I'm not thinking much about it. I don't think I added my blog. I don't know if I was initially on your blog roll or someone else added me because I saw, you know, my blog.
Oh, I did that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Yeah.
And I remember thinking like, oh, cool. This is neat, you know. And then I believe it was it was the Crotchety Old Fan blog. Yep. Well, who's the name of the blogger there? Is it Steven? Is that his name?
Steve Davidson, I believe is his name. Yeah.
Yeah. He then went and reviewed all the blogs that were on that list. And I was subscribed to his blog already, and I started reading the reviews of the blogs. And about, I don't know, 2 or 3 days into that, because it took him a couple weeks to get through all the blogs, it just, like, a light bulb went off in my head that, like, oh, well, why don't I add to this? Why don't I do a song where I mention as many of the blogs as I can? I think I only ended up mentioning, like, 50 or 60. But, I put together that
grasp.
Yeah. And for the people who maybe aren't aware of this, because I was following all these blogs, I wrote a song called Grasping for the Wind. And I think that's what it was. I think I had the idea, and then I think I went and I took a shower, and then I got that melody with the words "grasp for the wind" in my head, and I'm like, "All right, well now I'm going to write this." And then, it's the poorest excuse for songwriting you've ever heard, because all I did was I took all the blogs, I printed everything out, and I'm like, "All right," and I had like a verse structure, and I'm like, "I'll just rhyme these blogs, and there's enough here that I can find enough rhyming words," and I went with it from there. And it was fun to put together. And again, it wasn't something I thought a lot of, but I did think like, well, this is cool because at least the people whose blogs I mentioned will probably listen to this song, you know. And and it was fun, and I think it really it went along really well with the whole sense of that community. That it's like, you know what, we're into this stuff. We like talking about it. We like writing about it. And I think even beyond that, I think it's, you know, not to get too up with life or anything about it, but I think, you know, we're all here. We all have our jobs, and hopefully we all enjoy our job enough, you know, so we could put food on the table and not be like too miserable during the day. But, you know, most people want to make some kind of mark in the world, whatever that may be. And I think most of the people that are into blogging, they have something they want to share. They have an opinion. They have a point of view. And then you could look at it from a business point of view, is that they're having a brand or something that they want to help get out there and to promote. And I think this LinkUp meme really helped people who are just maybe doing this for fun or maybe even just experimenting with it for the first time to sort of realize like, oh, there are a lot of people out there and there's a big community and I can do this. And I was happy to do that song to help, you know, just kind of go along with that whole thing. And I thought it was a great thing. So once again, thanks for having the idea to do that, because I think it was great.
Oh, you're welcome. And I think your song went a long way to promoting it. It really, people really got into that. And of course, all the bloggers loved posting and saying, hey, look, I'm in a song. You
know? Yeah. But
I was freaking out when that thing hit. When I saw it, I went, holy. You know, I was talking to my wife. Her name's Valerie. I was like, Valerie, you got to see this. I'm in a song.
Well, that's great. I have to say it comes a little bit full circle because I went to Balticon a couple weeks ago. And I was there with Mer Lafferty and I had the great fortune of because I was on Mer's podcast, you know, I got to sort of hang out with the cool kids, like to, for lack of a better way of putting it, because, you know, Mer's real popular. Mer knows all the authors. So Mer introduced me to everybody. And some people were actually familiar with what I was doing, which was really awesome. It was like a great feeling. It's like, yeah, but you're a New York Times bestselling author. You're not supposed to like know my crappy songs, you know? but anyway, she introduced me to Peter Brett, Peter V. Brett. And, super nice guy. I already told the story, but I'll mention again. Played knock hockey with him on his iPad at Balticon. But anyway, so I gave him my CD because he had actually known about the George R. R. Martin song, and he's like a music fan. So I gave him my CD, and he gave me his book, his first book, The Warded Man, and signed it for me and everything, which is really cool. I'm about 120 pages into it, and I was looking at it and looking through the reviews, and I'm like, hey, look at that. Grasping for the Wind has a blurb on this. So
I do? Really? I never saw a finished copy. Mm-mm. I never did. Oh, that's news to me.
It's on the paperback, yeah.
Oh, really? Really? I only ever saw an advanced review copy of that. So, after I reviewed it, I had no idea. And it's not in The Desert Spear, which I have a finished copy of, but it's not in that one.
Patrick and John talk. I'm going to go grab my book so I can read you the blog. Hold on.
Well, that's pretty cool, though. I mean, they used a blurb from you on the book.
Oh, yeah. And that's not nearly my first one. I've had, five or six, I think, now at this point that have either made it into a book or on the back of a book.
That's awesome.
Which is great. I mean, that's the way, you know, it validates all the work I put into writing this material.
Sure. You know? Well, like I said, personally, I feel that it's very difficult to do what you do. And, you know, you do it really well. So kudos to you.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, that's not why I do it, but it is. I do enjoy it.
That's very important. I mean, if you're not enjoying what you're doing, then there's no point in doing it. It's just going to bring you down, and you're going to, you know, wish that you were doing something else.
Very true.
But now you don't do. I mean, you only do professional stuff. You don't do any self-published, no vanity press. Nothing like that. Is there any other genres that you don't cover?
Well, as far as genres I don't cover, that's a huge field. But I'm not really sure I understand the question.
Well, you do science fiction and fantasy. Will you do horror? Will you do like young adults? Will you do?
I have done the occasional horror. Didn't really enjoy it. I don't feel that I know that field well enough to write worthwhile reviews. I mean, if I take it in terms of text, I might be able to write a horror review, but that material doesn't appeal to me. I tend to also avoid the paranormal. I used to read a lot of that, but it got so the sameness of it got to me after a while. Mm-hmm. So I only pick out the authors I know are going to be fairly good, fairly enjoyable, or that I have heard have done something different. I do read other people's reviews, even if I haven't read the book yet, because I know that I can still come up with my own opinion that's not going to be changed by somebody else's review necessarily. And so that tells me whether or not I really ought to try this book out or give it a pass.
So there's an interesting thought. Do you go out and pick the books that you're going to review, or do people submit them, or, you know, how does that whole process work?
The majority are submitted these days. When I first started out, I just started pulling stuff off my shelves and started reviewing what I already had or books that I was going to buy. And it quickly cascaded to where authors started contacting me. For instance, one of the first authors to contact me was Paul Kemp, mm-hmm. who is well known for his Erebus Kale series of novels for Wizards of the Coast in the Forgotten Realms setting. Mm-hmm. And he said, hey, can you do an interview? He'd seen some of my reviews, and he said, can you do an interview? And so I did my very first interview with him, and he then sent me a couple copies of the forthcoming books. And so he and I have had a longstanding relationship.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so things like that. And so authors started sending it to me. At the beginning, I did take a lot of self-published material. And I contacted a few authors that I really like. And I said, hey, you know, I've got this review blog. It's got X many readers. Would you be interested in letting me review one of your books? And, you know, most authors are cool with that because these days they have to do so much of their own publicity. If I come to them, they love it, you know. And then now I just get stuff sent from the publisher. I don't even have to think about it.
Wow.
It's a nice position to be. Is Paul Kemp writing one of the Star Wars books that's coming out that I see?
He's already written one, and the second one is coming out in the next couple of months, I think.
Yeah, we talked about that. I think it's based on the one game that's being made. But I found the book.
Which there's a trailer of that out.
Is there?
Yeah.
A trailer of that?
Yeah, it's
set in the Old Republic is where it's set.
Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. And there's a trailer out for it now, I think. Everybody's been pushing it on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it.
I found my copy of The Warded Man, and you are the last review in the if you go to the, you know, the bookstore, it's the paperback copy. It's in the front. And it's the last review in the front. They gave you a pretty big chunk. It says, "Would you like me to read what you have here?" So you know, or
sure, I'd love to hear it.
It is that I'll read it. So it says, "Brett is a spectacular writer. I cannot recommend The Warded Man highly enough. It is thoroughly entertaining, having the right mix of suspense, action, and introspection. It never bogs down for any of its length as Brett paces the story masterfully. The world itself and the concept of the wards make the story unique among epic fantasies. The tale ends on a note of expectation, making me eager to read the second book, The Desert Spear, to find out what happens. The Warded Man is truly unputdownable. Make sure you have plenty of time for reading it because you will not want to leave its pages for anything. Grasping for the wind."
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big chunk. That's a nice. Yeah, so have you seen your blurbs on other books before?
Yeah, we were kind of talking about that.
Okay, yeah, sorry about that. That's okay.
You stepped away.
Yeah.
I've seen it, I think 5-6 times now.
How was that the first time? Was that a big thrill? I imagine it would be.
Oh, my word. Top of the world. I mean, you see, it doesn't have my name attached to it. It just says Grasping for the Wind, but even then you're like, hey, that's my blog. That's mine.
Yeah.
You know, I made that.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at before with the whole link up meme is that you started doing this, but, I mean, mostly for fun, but also because I'm guessing, you know, you have a point of view, you want to put something out there. And I think to sort of have a blurb is quite a validation for what you're doing. And, you know, I imagine that that's a really good feeling. And I wasn't even aware of, you know, the fact that the blogs were starting to get blurbed on the books until somewhat recently. You know, we were talking about Mike Resnick before the podcast, and you know, Lou has, you know, put one of my songs in Mike Resnick's book, and I noticed also that SF Signal is one of the blurbs on that, and I was like, hey, SF Signal. And then when I asked John, he was like, yeah, that was cool. And then I realized, like, SF Signal's probably been blurbed a million times now. You know, they probably have a ton of blurbs on the books. Because I think, you know, it used to be where there was a lot of book coverage in newspapers, at least, you know. And nowadays, there's almost, like, no book coverage or very little in newspapers and magazines. And forget science fiction and fantasy. You know, it's maybe, like, they'll review the new Stephen King book, but that's about it. So I think the blogs are where science fiction and fantasy gets the most, you know, most written about it. So yeah, it only makes sense that now the books are going to the blogs for the blurbs.
Well, you talk a little bit about community, John. Science fiction and fantasy fans have always been a tight little community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have always promoted our stuff. You know, and when no one else would. But that's why we have conventions and I mean all that stuff, because the fans always want to get together and they want to meet the authors and they want to talk to other people who enjoy the books that they read. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's always been that way. There's always been that sense of community, and so if no one else is going to talk about the science fiction and fantasy books coming out there, we will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you know of any of your other, any other blurbs that may be coming up, or you didn't know about this one? So do they just do it? And I guess they don't even tell you, you just,
very rarely do they tell me. The only time I've ever had anyone tell me that it was going to happen was Jeff Carlson for, his third book in his series Plague War. It's a series of, I think he was published by either Daw or Ace, one of the Penguin, imprints. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Thank you. And he contacted me and said, hey, you're going to be in this next one. Do you want a copy? And I said, well, yeah. So yeah. He sent me a copy and I reviewed that. I had actually skipped the second book to review the third book. That's the first time I've ever done that. And the last time, actually.
Yeah.
So that's the only time anyone's ever done that. Most of the other times it's been, I'm in the bookstore and I go, you know what? I reviewed this book. Let me take a quick look at it and see if, you know, I got blurbed, and it'll be there. And I'll just, wow, yeah, it's great. You know, see me jumping up and down in the bookstore aisle. People think I'm nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, go check it out. You're in the worded man. So
absolutely.
When you look at one of these books and you're going to, you've decided that you're going to review it, do you read it more clinically, or do you still enjoy it as you're reading it? What's your process there?
I think that I enjoy it as much as I read it clinically. I don't think the two are separate in my mind. As I read it, yeah, I see things that I go, oh, I'm going to want to mention that in the review. But I'm not a literary critic. So, the best way to define it is I'm a reader response critic, I think. Basically, I tell you what I think, how I felt, how did it make me, did I enjoy it, what did I enjoy about it, specifically. And so if I can't enjoy it, then I obviously can't tell you what I enjoyed about it. So.
Well, but if you're reading it for your own pleasure, but you don't actually like it when you're done, you can still write a review about it and just say you didn't like it.
Oh, yeah. I've done that before. Absolutely. I pick up the book and I go, I hope I'm going to enjoy this one, or I'm really interested in this one, or, you know, and I have my preferences, and I've mentioned this before in articles I've written for the blog, but... you know, I have a preference for epic fantasy. I grew up in the 90s, so Jordan and Eddings and Brooks and all those guys. I mean, they're the guys that are even Goodkind. I mean, now that I'm an adult, I'm not as much of a fan. But when I was a kid, you know, I just swallowed that stuff.
What do you think about Goodkind coming back to the Sword of Truth series for three more books?
I think he had to, because the last book ended so poorly. It was so dull.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a spoiler alert for people if you haven't actually read the last book, but it is, I mean, to end with a football game, I don't see it. When you've had this long, protracted epic fantasy with all this magic and all this character development and all these, some of these interesting characters, although Richard can get kind of annoying sometimes because he is obviously supposed to. I mean, it is a bit of a proselytizing sort of story.
Just a bit. Story. Just a bit. Yeah.
So, that just was not a good way to end that story. So I think he's just trying to redeem himself.
Well, good luck to him.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Well, maybe we can move on to the next bit of news, to another big epic fantasy writer, and that's George R.R. Martin, who's a fella I've heard of before.
He's not your bitch.
He is not. No. but anyway, it's been news for a while that HBO is making a series based on his sort of Ice and Fire. A Song of Ice and Fire books, I should say. And the teaser trailer aired this past week. I guess it was before True Blood, which I did not see, but I did see the trailer online. And it's very brief. You know, it is a teaser. I mean, it's just a very little bit. But
I saw something on Twitter about that. Someone's like, oh, did you see the trailer for Martin's Game of Thrones? And someone said, yeah, all 7 seconds of it.
Yeah, it's short and they don't show much, but I was pretty excited about it. I mean, how do you guys feel? Are you looking forward to that? Do you care about that? You know, you both read the series. I know, Patrick, you did. John, did you read the Martin books?
I did.
Yeah. And how are you looking forward to the series at all? The televised version, or what's your opinion on that?
I'm really excited for it. I wish I owned HBO. I wish I even owned cable, much less to be able to watch it. But I'll have to maybe find somebody local who has a party, and we can all get together and watch it, like the True Blood guys do. A lot of people get together and party and watch it.
True Blood is fantastic. I mean, it's obviously not for kids. It's a great show. I'm very excited about the fact that it's HBO doing it and not like, you know, Fox.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think HBO is the only, I'm not even going to say only network. I think this was the only way that this could be done.
No, there's a couple. I mean, HBO, Showtime, even Starz is making an effort now.
That's true. I mean, I guess the point I was going to make is that, like, you couldn't make a movie out of this. It's way too long. It has to be a series. Yes, and I think when I heard that they were going to do it where it's like, each book is good. The plan is to do each book as a season, and I think that's perfect. And
until they catch up to him,
well, he's got a few years. I think he'll be fine. but I'm in the minority in that opinion, apparently. But I liked what I saw in the trailer. I've really liked the casting so far. I think, you know, Sean Bean is a good choice for. To play the lead role in this series. And I liked the mood and the feel of the trailer, and it makes me, you know, pretty hopeful that it's going to be done well. So I think it's great. I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, HBO has a good history of doing period dramas real well. I mean, with
Rome
and what's the other one? Tudors?
That's Showtime. Right? That's Showtime.
Is that Showtime?
Yeah, I think that
does have a good history of doing period dramas really well.
They've done Rome. They've done Deadwood.
That's right.
They've done a few others, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think it'll be good. That'll be something where I don't have HBO right now, but that would be something where I would probably, like John said, I'd hope maybe see if I could find someone that has HBO and has a party, or I would maybe even think about just getting it for when it airs. Or I'm sure it'll be on like iTunes, or maybe even like a pay-per-view kind of a thing where you can buy it, the episode, you know, the week after.
I'd be curious. You know, Starz, they did the Spartacus Blood and Sand, a horribly gory, violent, sexual show, but I mean, really, really good. It was better than I thought it was going to be, if you can get past the first episode. And they did something. I don't have Starz.
Mm-hmm.
They had it. It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they had him. They had it simultaneous with the episodes that were on the channel. So I think it'd be nice if, you know, HBO did something similar to that and they released it, you know, on Netflix, and then it's under the subscription. They're making money for it. But, you know, those of us who, you know, don't have HBO, don't want to pay for HBO or can't afford to pay for HBO, could get it through Netflix. And I think that would really boost the ratings and help the show succeed. I don't see why they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, if ratings is the only drive, but I mean, monetarily, it's probably not the smartest move for HBO. I mean,
I don't think they would do it, because I don't see any of the HBO shows on Netflix streaming right now. And
aren't some of the ones on DVD? No, wait, there might be Showtime ones only.
And I was gonna say Showtime.
Yeah,
Showtime has a lot of shows on there.
Yeah, HBO doesn't have, I don't even think they have their old stuff for streaming. Like, I think the point that you're making about Starz is not only do they have it for streaming, they have it immediately. Like, as soon as the episode airs, they throw it up and you can find it. And I think that's great. And I don't see HBO doing it. Unless things change, I don't see it happening, because they're Starz and HBO are slightly different because, you know, I think HBO is considered like more premier content, I guess.
And more established now that
they've made more original content.
I mean, Starz, historically, all they've been is various movie channels.
Yes.
They're only just starting to break into this.
Yes, so, and they've done a great job so far. But HBO has a lot of big brands. They have The Sopranos, and they have Sex and the City, and they, you know, and have made a ton of money on those brands. So it's kind of one of those, if it's, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. They're making a ton of money when they do these, and True Blood's doing well for them. And it's like, you know what? They'll get all the buzz. People will talk about it. They'll sell a ton of DVDs, and, you know, they'll just, they'll do it that way. So unless...
I wonder if True Blood audiences are going to carry over into Game of Thrones. Like, that's something that's occurred to me. They're disparate enough, but then again, at the same time, we're all part of that same community in a lot of ways.
I would think yes and no, because I think even though, you know, the initial audience for True Blood probably read the books, I think that the show of True Blood has gone way beyond the people who read the books. So I don't know how many people that just watch the show will end up watching, you know, the Game of Thrones, but you never know.
You bring up something that's kind of interesting. This last weekend, the A-Team opened up at the movies and it tanked. And one of the things that I was reading about that was, the question was asked, did it tank because it was PG-13? You know, it was specifically released so that as many kids as possible could see it. So they really toned it down and kind of made it a little bit silly. And when you look at something like Spartacus or something like True Blood, those are far more adult-oriented shows. Mm-hmm. You would not see those anywhere near network television. You know, I can't imagine True Blood ever showing up, you know, on your local independent station in the summer reruns. I just don't think it's ever going to happen. It's too adult content.
End up just like Sex and the City moved to cable. It's possible that a cleaned up version may end up at.
That is possible. But I guess where I'm going with this is I'm wondering if. A Game of Thrones, I think, is going to be more adult,
and
I think it's going to appeal to adults, and you know, the same audience that's going to True Blood and really liking it, really enjoying it, I think can easily cross over to a Game of Thrones because sometimes I feel like we're a little bit starved for something more. Adult, and I don't necessarily mean it has to be, you know, boobs and penises hanging out and sex scenes. I'm just saying, you know, more something that's not going to necessarily appeal to a 13-year-old, but is going to appeal to a 30-year-old.
I think it sounds like you're saying, like, you're talking about deeper themes, like themes that deal with who we are as humans and how we deal with the world around us and. You know, just all of that kind of thing, which is hard to show when you have certain FCC guidelines you have to meet.
Right? Yeah, I think with those kind of shows, I think when you have these adult tags, I think what happens is because they're not being, whenever you're making a PG-13 or something that's geared towards a certain audience, it becomes very, you know, marketing driven. Like, we want to make something that a lot of people can go see and we can make a lot of money. And you know, whoever is in charge of the money is really watching, hounding over the creative process. And I think what happens when you have these more adult themes, I think everything is just more open. And I think you can have sort of a, you know, sort of a purity of artistic purpose, meaning whoever is making these shows, whoever's creating it, because they already have the green light to kind of do whatever they want in terms of violence or nudity or whatever, they can really just go ahead with their artistic vision. And I think that's why those kinds of shows are just better. And it's not because of the violence or the sexuality. It's because whoever's in charge of creating is given more, you know, freedom to create what they want. They're not, I imagine they're not being hounded over every step of the way. Therefore, an adult can enjoy it, not because there's violence or anything else, but because it's a statement that hasn't been, tampered with and watered down a million times before it got to you. So I think that's the success of those shows is something to do with that.
Well, yeah, Patrick. I mean, it's just like a novel. A novelist can write whatever the heck he wants, and it's just up to the publisher to decide whether they want to publish that. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, HBO allows the same, to a certain extent, amount of artistic license where you can write what you want in terms of script and then produce it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, definitely. But no, I think that that should be great. But anyway, so I know.
So did everybody else's screensaver just come on, or was that just me?
Mine did too. I think it was fine. I think we all probably timed it the same way. But but anyway, so I did. You know, maybe it'd be kind of nice to sort of round out the podcast tonight with not talking about upcoming books, because I know, and John, you said you didn't really want to do that, but maybe we can all talk about what we're currently reading, or you know, John, you're reading a lot, so what 7 books are you reading right now?
Yeah, just for the record, before you answer that, I looked it up and I counted on Grasping for the Wind, and according to your site, you've read 42 books so far this year.
That's correct.
Holy crap.
Well, not counting the last, I think, 5 or 6 I did in the last 2 weeks.
Wow. Sheesh. God bless you. God bless you.
Not to toot my own horn or anything, you know. It's not like I'm awesome or anything.
No, you're awesome.
No, you know what? You're not. You're not awesome. You're awesome sauce.
Yeah, what's with that?
I have no idea.
I don't. Awesome sauce, like I would think you'd want the meat of it, the not the sauce part, really. So
I'm probably going to alienate half our audience, but like I always think, you know, when things like awesome sauce start getting used like on Twitter or whatever, I'm like, we're adults. Do we need to say awesome sauce here? Come on. Yeah. All right. Anyway, there goes all of our listeners. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there goes both our listeners. Thanks, okay, Emilio.
I'm going to write awesome sauce in a tweet as soon as we're done with the podcast. And
now you have to write. Now you have to write awesome sauce the song.
Yeah. No, I'm not doing that. I write a lot of silly songs. I write a lot of silly songs. I'm not writing an awesome sauce song. I'm sorry. I draw the line there. But any, you know, John, considering you'll probably have a lot to talk about what you're reading, I'll go first with what I'm reading. I just finished Shadow March by Tad Williams. Mm-hmm. Finally finished that. I liked it quite a bit. The only other Tad Williams I read was The War of the Flowers, or The Flower War. I forget the name of it. War of the Flowers, yeah. And I loved that. And that was one of the early books I read before Sci-Fi Songs. And that was the main character was a musician in that. So that's what kind of drew me to that book. And I loved Tad Williams writing it. And in this book, what a similarity that I could draw to The War of the Flowers is that he has this ability, at least in the 2 books that I've read by Tad Williams, to create sort of this world of wonder, or having this like sort of wonder magical element to a world that is otherwise quite gritty. And almost some things that I think in another author's hands would come off as being silly. And it doesn't come off as silly with Tad Williams. Like in both books that I read, there's a lot of like fairies and like little people, like, you know, little munchkin almost kind of people. And he pulls that off where when that kind of element is introduced, you're like, yeah, that's fine. A 6-inch dude that I'm down with that, you know,
pixie.
Yeah. So he did a great job with that. And I liked Shadow March. If for a book that, as the paperback was, I think about 750 pages or so, it's a long book, and I didn't feel like it was long as I was reading it. Not a ton of action, not a lot happened, but I still really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the world building, and I actually want. I'm really looking forward to reading the next. I think the next 2 books are already out. Lately I've read a lot of first books of series and enjoyed them, but haven't gone on to read the other books in the series for whatever reason. Cause I guess I'm just trying to sample a lot of different authors these days, and I read slowly, but I really do want to go and get that next book and read it. Cause I really enjoyed it. And I really feel like he set it up for some good stuff to happen. So like that. As I already mentioned, I did start reading The Warded Man by Peter V. Brett with a blurb by John Ottinger. This is great. I started it this weekend, and I'm already about 120 pages into it, which is fast reading for me. So I agree so far with John's blurb in the book. It is excellent. Now, this is sort of the opposite of Tad Williams. This is very action-packed so far. A lot has happened even in the first 120 pages. So Peter Brett, The Warded Man, I'm reading that now. And we will actually have Peter on as a guest sometime in July. So hopefully we'll finish it by then so we can actually talk about the book. So, John, what are you reading, or what would you like to talk about?
Well, as far as what I've been currently reading, I just finished up Stories, which is an anthology edited by Neil Gaiman and Al Serantonio, I think is how it's pronounced. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they got a lot of big-name authors to contribute a story that is mostly realistic fiction, but with a small twist of fantasy to it. So, in some ways, they're a little bit gothic. They're a lot like Gaiman's stories. Exactly what makes him popular is what a lot of these stories are. Although I had some issues with the, not the stories themselves, but the choices that the editors made, which will come out in the review.
Just as a side note, did you see that Neil Gaiman was in court this week?
No, I missed that.
I saw that. Yeah, with Todd McFarlane.
Yep, he took Todd McFarlane to court over Medieval Spawn, which is a character that appeared in the Spawn comics that Gaiman apparently created. And so they've been in court this week.
I didn't realize that Gaiman was involved in the early. I guess he was sort of writing a little bit for Spawn before it actually came out, and I guess McFarlane sort of took some of his characters and then later did not credit him.
The quote that I saw from Gaiman was that he was actually asked to write Spawn, I think like the year after it came out in Imagine.
Okay.
Or Image. And he was told he could do whatever he wanted. And so he created a medieval version of Spawn, and like an angelic character that fought alongside him. And he also created some other characters for it, and then I guess now they're using the same character slightly changed, but according to the mythos of Spawn or something, there can only be one every 400 years or something like that, and so essentially it's his character and he wants to get paid. So,
well, no, actually he doesn't want to get paid. I don't know if you read the other part of the article, is that Gaiman has said that if he wins, he's going to donate all of his winnings to charity.
I didn't see that part.
Yeah, no, Gaiman's a pretty stand-up dude, because he's really doing it out of principle, that he's like, especially nowadays with all of these comics being made into movies and making a ton of money, he's like, look, you know, this needs to be done fairly. And I think a lot of creators can really get, now Gaiman is someone who's quite powerful in the industry, but let's face it, an up and coming writer or artist maybe creates a little character and someone either rips it off or a company doesn't give him credit, and then ends up having this character appear in a movie making millions, and then this creator is left out in the cold. I think Gaiman is really trying to do this to do what's right, and he's not doing it for money, because like I said, if he wins, he's going to donate it to charity. So I thought that was an interesting story. Anyway,
that is cool.
Continue on. Yeah, continue on with what you were saying.
I apologize, John, for interrupting you.
Oh, no. That was interesting. I did not know that.
And, yep.
Yeah, Gaiman's always been a stand-up guy. I mean, my first introduction to him was when that couple, I think it was in the Philippines, he contacted Gaiman and said, you know what, can you write? We're going to be at your signing in the Philippines. Can you write in the book, Will You Marry Me? And Gaiman did it. It's on YouTube. Check it out. I mean, there's a whole video of it, and she didn't even realize right away, and it's hilarious. You got to watch the video.
But cool. That's awesome.
This was years ago. It's like 3 or 4 years ago, but occasionally it comes back up every so often on YouTube. But so do check it out. Gaiman wedding proposal, I think, would probably bring it up.
Cool.
As far as other stuff I'm reading, though, let's see. What else did I just finish? I read today The Unit by Terry DeHart. I think it's DeHart. He's a brand new author. It's a post-apocalyptic fiction, which I think is quite good, and I recommend. is a, the writer's a Marine and a disaster expert. So
cool.
Who better to write about a nuclear holocaust than a disaster expert, right?
Yeah.
So read that. What else have I read recently? Just read Rachel Neumeier's first book in the Griffin Mage series. It's a book from Orbit. Good epic fantasy. First time I've seen Griffins used well since Mercedes Lackey first used them years ago, back in the 80s, I think. And then before that, what else? I read another epic fantasy before that, and I can't remember what it is now. Oh, Song of the Dragon by Tracy Hickman.
Okay.
Yeah, it didn't come off too well on me, but that'll come out in a review too.
What did you think of the excerpt of The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson?
Didn't actually read it, to be honest with you. I don't like doing that. It drives me crazy to like read the first chapter or prologue or something and not be able to finish a story. That just, it drives me insane. I'll promote it, but I won't read it myself.
Yeah, it's up on my site, but I'm not going to bother with it.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, how about you?
You make me sound all arrogant.
No, I understand. I don't read the blurbs like that. I don't read like an excerpt chapter either. I want to just have it and read it and finish it. I don't like so.
A lot of times, I will not read the excerpt if they put it in the back of the current book. You know, sometimes they do that. It's like, you know, you read the last page and you're going, why is there like 20 more pages after this? And you flip it and it's like, here, read chapter one of the next book that will be available 3 years from now.
Right. Totally.
Although that's changing a lot now. I mean, the publishers, especially people like publishers like Peer and Orbit, they're acquiring three books in a series right away and they're coming out like 1, 2, 3 in a month. And those are the publishers that are doing a lot of that excerpting. I don't read the excerpts either, but those are the publishers doing that. I don't see the ones that wait, you know, 2, 3 years between doing that as much.
Yeah, I think if you're a new author and you're writing a series, like they don't want to do anything with it until you're done with the series because, you know, all the George R. R. Martin stuff and everything else, they don't want people waiting around. I know they did that with the Brent Weeks books, the Night Angel trilogy. I know they did that. They put them all out within like 6 months, I think the three books came out within a 6 month span. So, I think it's smart. I read the first one, which is very good. I haven't gotten around to reading the other two yet, but very good. But I know a lot of people were into that because they were able to read the whole trilogy, bing, bing, boom, just like that. And
I think actually his was one of the first attempts to do that.
Yeah, and I think it was
highly successful.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. You know, it really does.
It's a cool idea.
Yeah, and those were just in paperback, though. Those were not hardcover at all, I don't
think. Yeah, and it works, too, because I believe that a lot of times, like Orbit and Peer, they acquire books that haven't been published in the U.S. but have already been published in, like, Australia or the U.K.
Right.
And so all the books are written. They've already got some basis of success, and so they know that they'll probably do fairly well here, and they can release all three right away. Without having to take as much risk.
Right.
You know, it's kind of funny because in the world of Twitter, you can follow your favorite author no matter where they live. And some of mine, you know, don't live in this country. And it's kind of heartbreaking to see them talk about books that are coming out in England or, you know, somewhere else that won't be available here for a while because they haven't secured, you know, an American publisher for it yet. That always
and
kind
they
of...
Never.
Yeah, that always kind of, you know, you're sitting there going, oh, I may never get to read that book.
Yeah.
Kind of frustrating. So you were wondering what have I been reading lately? I've been, last week I read, three graphic novels. So I read Serenity, hold on. Serenity, Those Left Behind, which is supposed to bridge between Firefly and the movie Serenity. I read The Lone Ranger from Dynamite Entertainment, and I read Welcome to the Jungle from Dynamite and the Dabble Brothers, which is a Dresden Files book by Jim Butcher. And then I also finished up Proven Guilty, which is a Dresden book. And I'm halfway through now, Small Favor. Oh, no, wait. I did Proven Guilty. I did White Knight. And now I'm in halfway through Small Favor. All Dresden Jim Butcher books. I'm in a Dresden mode right now.
Yeah, for real. I've only read Small Favor, and I didn't really like it a lot. But do you think that was probably the best one for me to read?
No, because you're so far into it by then. There's so much stuff going on. You've missed a lot.
That was one publisher sent me, and I reviewed it for them.
What's the first book in that series?
Stormfront or Welcome to the Jungle. Because what they did was the Dabble Brothers came to Jim Butcher and they said, we'd love to adapt the Dresden Files for comic. And he said, oh, that'd be great because I love comic books and I've always wanted to write comic books and it'd be really cool to see my characters in comic books. And they said, well, what would you think about writing something that kind of starts us off and before Stormfront? And he said, sure, I'll do that. And then it's kind of funny in the liner notes, he says that was the hardest thing he's ever done. He's never tried to write a comic book before, and it's completely different, and it threw him for a loop, and it was really difficult to do. Mm-hmm. But he did it, and he said it's the first representation of Dresden that actually matches what he's always had in his head of how the character looks.
Mm-hmm.
And so cool. he wrote this piece that's called Welcome to the Jungle. It takes place before Stormfront chronologically. And then they got into Stormfront. And then Dabble Brothers, I guess, went under, and now Dynamite Entertainment is doing all the subsequent books in the series.
Cool. Good stuff. Well,
I did put a review up of Welcome to the Jungle on the blog last week. And then this week I've got The Lone Ranger. So
cool. Well, I think that kind of nicely sort of wraps up the podcast this week. We've been talking for a while. So this is the point in the show where we pimp our various projects. So, John Ottinger, why don't you go first? Tell us where we can find you and all of your stuff online.
Easiest place to find me is www.graspingforthewind.com. A couple of forthcoming things I've got coming out. Interview at Strange Horizons with Jonathan Mayberry, who's the author of Dragon Factory and Patient Zero. I don't know when that's going to come out. Strange Horizons has their own schedule as far as when they do that, and they don't necessarily tell you. And I've got...
That's convenient of them.
Yeah. It's okay. I mean, you know, it really works for them, and most of the material they publish is so good that, you know, who cares, right? and then I've got an editorial coming out in Electric Velocity in the next issue.
Nice.
Which is kind of a history of zombie fiction. I was not very knowledgeable in it, so I said, you know what, I want to learn about this stuff. So I got sort of a brief and incomplete history of zombie fiction.
Well, as we learned from Z, Hipster Please, a couple weeks back, in the event of a zombie apocalypse, do not be in downtown Atlanta because apparently that is just a slaughterhouse. his words.
Yes, I agree with that.
His words, not that. Mine.
It's true.
All right, anything else you have that we should look out for, John?
He's also on Twitter.
Yes, I'm on Twitter at John Ottinger, and pretty much everything else can be found through the blog. I usually announce anything that's going on as far as that goes. Oh, have another interview coming out with Keige Johnson, I think that's how you pronounce her name, who wrote Spar at the Nebula Awards blog. She actually won the Nebula this year.
Wow, awesome.
For her story Spar, so that should be out whenever Charles Tan decides he wants to put it up on the Nebula Awards blog.
Cool.
And you're also in a regular on occasion over at SF Signal, correct?
Yeah, I'm in a regular. Haven't posted there in probably 6 months, but that's my fault, not theirs.
Yeah, me too. Cool. Well, thanks, John. You could find I'm on Twitter at John Aniello, JohnAnAnEalio. My blog is scifisongs.blogspot.com. You can go there and get a lot of free music. You can also check out my album on iTunes or Amazon MP3 or CD Baby or a lot of other sources. Just put Sci-Fi Songs or John Aniello in the search engines and you can find it there. I have a new song I'm working on, which I don't want to talk too much about, but hopefully that will be out, not this week, but probably next week. I'm in sort of, I laid down a lot of guitar tracks today, and yeah, it's getting near the end, but it's going to take me at least another week to finish that. I will also, I'm going to be going to ReaderCon up, that's in July, that's in a couple of weeks still, but that's a very author-focused con, so if any of you out there are going to ReaderCon, you know, shoot me a message on Twitter or, you know, my email or anything and let me know. I'd love to meet up with some folks up there. And yeah, that's about it for my stuff. Patrick, how about you?
Oh, I have the usual stuff. The blog is atfmb.com. That stands for All Things From My Brain, which is also the Twitter feed, twitter.com/atfmb. On the blog, last week and this week, I got a couple of reviews. You're going to have Welcome to the Jungle by Jim Butcher, and you're going to have The Lone Ranger from Dynamite Entertainment. These are not the kinds of reviews that John Ottinger does. Mine have pictures.
Which makes mine better because you have to actually think about it.
Yeah, mine has less words because words are hard.
Words rock, man.
Says, you know, words are hard, says the aspiring author. We also have Evermist, which is the serial fiction that comes out every Friday, atfmb.com/EVERMIST, Evermist. And then we have the functionalnerds.com. Or functionalnerds.com, where
which is still up for debate. I'm letting you know that whether you're functional or not.
I'm
deciding whether or not that's true.
I'm fairly functional. I can talk to anybody about anything. Haven't you figured that out yet? Haven't you been listening to the show?
Yeah, that's why it's up for grabs. So.
And I, you know what else? I'm working on something that's a super secret project that's called The Doom of Damocles, and hopefully I'll have that finished soon and submitted to Mr. John Anilio for his review.
Oh, okay, sure. I'd love to. Is it a novel or is it a?
No, I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to wait until you. I'm going to wait right. And send it to you, and then we're going to see what you say.
Cool. All right. Well, I look forward to seeing it. Cool.
And who's on the show next week, John?
I believe next week we are supposed to have John Cascio, who is a stellar artist, does many of Pyre covers.
Yes.
So we're excited to have him on. I know he's never really been on podcasts before either. So I know there's a lot of I was recommending what mics for him to get and that kind of thing. So I'll have to email him this week and see, make sure he's getting all that squared away. But yeah, John Picasso should be next week. So I really look forward to, cause I was a wannabe artist as a kid. So I'm really looking forward to having him on the show.
And he's Lou Anders confessed that he is an extremely good friend of his. So hopefully Lou has not yet told him that we're not worth $120 for a mic.
Yes. Hopefully. Hopefully not. Yeah. Yeah. So John.
That's going to be a good conversation. He is an amazing artist. One of my favorites.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
His stuff is fantastic. I've got Age of Misrule sitting right here on my desk waiting to be read.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, so John, so that should be a real interesting podcast next week. So please join us. And one more time, I'd like to thank John Ottinger for coming on the show.
Yep. Thank you, John.
Thank you guys for having me.
And I think that's pretty much it for episode 14. Join us next week. We'll have another new episode. Thanks, guys.
I'm in no rush to go anywhere. I mean, or anything else. So.
Patrick, I'm psyched that we didn't have any big Skype problems tonight.
Yep. That was fun.
Yeah.
I think I called I started the conference call at the same moment that John and Elio tried to call me, and Skype exploded. Anelia wants to go to midnight.
Yeah.
did get your message, your direct message, where you said that you felt most comfortable talking about video games and movies.
Smart Alec. Smack the upside of the head. If I could reach across and just give you one, belt you one. Robots and vamps and the sci-fi guy.
Live in fantasy land and die. Yeah, if I had a dollar for every time I heard John and Elio say that, I'd be rich. Obviously, I've been recording this the whole time. Oh, crap, I didn't click the button. No, just kidding.
Are you getting how he runs things here, John? This is what I got to deal with every week with him.
This is what he puts up with so that he doesn't have to do anything else.
Yeah.
It's nice when you get to just be a talking head and not have to deal with the technical side.
I'm not. The Spiral Galaxy Reviews, the
Highlanders Book Review, Sandstorm Review. I'm the
once again, if I could just reach across and smack the upside. Moon, it's worth it.
It's in my Netflix queue, but I haven't watched it yet.
Cool. Patrick does edit this later, so if there's anything that you say that you're like, maybe after you say it, don't want it out there, just say, hey, I want to edit that later, or, you know. Jump drives and cantrips world in a satin bag.
Fruitless recursion and the... And Elio brings that up because last week I recorded so much stuff that he and Mer Lafferty said that I'm going to be able to hold over their heads for years, that they said, but don't put this on the podcast! Don't put this on the podcast! Actually, I should take that sound bite. I think John said that about 12 times. Yeah, and then, Patrick, don't put this in the podcast. And then...
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely, it would make for a beautiful tagline or teaser.
All right.
Author to author, billion light year bookshelf. SF gospel and the book geeks. Major
gal and next read. It's a very intellectual discussion. It was nice. I thought it was good. So.
That's an intellectual discussion for you guys. You've talked to people like Lou Anders and from the property. That scares the heck out of me.
We need to get Lou Anders and Dale Chase and Kate Sherrod and myself on an episode and call it the Doctor Who episode and just talk about Doctor Who for an hour.
Thanks, Mo. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.